hairless mutie perched on Christie's back, its sucker fist caught in her hair, its needle teeth bared to bite the side of her lovely throat. Spinning, he angled the glass blade across the Sticky's neck. The body jolted, and the head tumbled off the ragged stump, which spewed gore to the ceiling. The dead hand was still caught in Christie's hair. The corpse's body weight pulled her backward. Ryan couldn't bear the sight of it touching her.
Fuck!
He rolled his forearms, whipping the sword over, slashing its hacksaw teeth against the wrist joint. Arm and hand separated quickly. The spasmodically clutching fingers released. When Ryan whirled back, he faced a pair of onrushing beasts who cleared the gap in the corpses. They were already too close for him to pick up and swing the axe. He sidestepped their frantic arm-waving charge and used the tip of the uni-strut like a lance, jamming it through the needle teeth and into the mouth of the creature on the right. In the same motion, he ripped the sword down and out, splitting tongue, jawbone, and throat down to the collarbone. The other Sticky's outstretched fingers brushed his face, but either it was going too fast, or his face was too bloody for the suckers to attach. As it moved past him, sliding on the floor, Christie stepped up and nailed it with a full power whack of her pickaxe.
Ugh! Gaia, damn it!
The combination of her speed and its momentum made for deep penetration. The Sticky's forehead dimpled in around the point of the axe, and Christie jerked it off its feet and onto its back. She stomped the handle, freeing the point by popping up a divot of the Sticky's skull. The flow of Sticky's had slowed to a trickle. Now Ryan was able to take his time. He measured his sword strokes, timing them so necks and saw blade made contact at the maximum power point of his swing. Detached heads careened off the walls, bouncing into the dark. Then the rush stopped altogether. From atop the high pile of bodies, doll's eyes and bald heads and flabby faces stared at him, as if suddenly it had dawned on them that he was royally kicking their asses.
Come on! I ain't done yet!
As the muties turned to run, he followed them through the gap, his boots slipping on the slick flesh and spilled guts. Their traction was even worse than his. They were used to relying on their suckers, and the suckers did them no good on the wet floor. Their feet and hands slid on the edges of the broken glass and were cut to pieces. Ryan gained on them easily, running right up their backs, he chopped their legs out from under them. He dropped three more like that before he stopped.
Jesus! Will it ever end?
On his way back to Christie, he finished off the badly wounded Sticky with single blows to the neck. It was only after he'd crawled through the gap that he realized he was covered with blood. It dripped down his arms and face, and from the tips of his hair.
How many did you kill, lover?
Don't know for sure. But I saw so many of the bastards in such a small space. Dump the ore out of your bag.
Why?
Just do it. Please.
Ryan set aside the Unistrut sword and tipped his bag full of ore onto the floor. Then he picked up one of the bald, severed heads by its eye sockets and stuffed it in the bag.
Ryan, are you all right?
Put them in the bag. Get as many in as you can and put them in the bag.
Because the Sticky heads were lighter than the ore and the bag stretched somewhat, they could pack a lot inside and still carry it. Ryan's sack topped out at 10.
Okay. Now what?
Take them back to the cart.
I don't understand.
You will.
Ryan was already moving, dragging the bag behind him, his glass sword in his other hand. When he exited the crevice and started toward JB and Dean, the boy jumped up.
Dad, are you all right?
Fine, boy. Don't worry, it's not my blood. It's theirs.
He poured the heads into the sledge. The other slave, standing guard, heard the hollow thuds and ventured close enough for a look. Their jaws dropped.
I'll be nuked.
Then Christie stepped up and did the same thing, tipping her overstuffed bag into the cart. Blood-smeared faces, gaping, needle-toothed jaws, and blank eyes looked up from the bottom of the box.
Ryan, what's going on? And what the hell is that shit?
We'll be back in a minute. Come on, Christie.
They made two more trips to the kill site. Ryan used the Unistrut to chop the heads off the dead. They loaded their bags with grisly trophies. When they reappeared the second time, the slaves left their own sledges and gathered around to watch the dumping.
I counted 54, Dad!
That's a shitload of heads. What are you gonna do with them, Ryan?
Cash them in, of course.
Ryan looked over at Gabhart, who lay curled on his side on the floor, unconscious and barely breathing.
Help me get the colonel in the cart, then let's push it into the fresh air.
The other slaves deserted their posts to follow.
Jesus! Look at all those fucking stickies! God damned amazing!
Ryan, JB, Christy, and Dean shoved the sledge back to the main tunnel's fork, past the pair of troopers, who didn't notice anything was wrong until they saw the mob following. Then it was too late to intervene. As they pulled the sledge out of the mine and onto the flat, the mob spilled out as well and spread out over the dimpled ground, passing the word that something exciting was about to happen. The companions pushed their cart past the others waiting to be unloaded, right up to the head of the line. No one complained. They glanced at the cargo, grinned, and waved them on. The trooper standing beside the ore truck looked into their cart. There was no way to gauge his surprise through the opaque visor, but he paused for a long moment.
We don't give water in exchange for heads. Only ore.
Fuck that!
One of the slaves, whose sledge was waiting to be unloaded, reached into the companion's cart, grabbed a bald head for himself, and quickly placed a double armload of ore on the ground beside the cart. The idea quickly caught on.
Yeah, yeah!
Everyone with a sledge waiting to be unloaded did the same. In a matter of minutes, their cart was empty of heads, and a pile of ore stood beside the cart.
How about some water now?
Give water to sledge number 7.
The slaves who traded seemed delighted with the deal they had made. Hooting and hollering, they began booting the sticky heads around Ground Zero like soccer balls. Even the radsick ones, too weak to stand, managed smiles at the ghoulish antics. The major horrors of the slaves' everyday existence had been reduced to kick toys. Ryan ignored the raised pulse rifle of the trooper guarding the water tank, opened the tap, stuck his head under it, and rinsed the blood off his hair and face. There was so much blood that it stained the wide puddle beneath the spout a rosy pink. After he'd cleaned himself off, Ryan filled a cup and took it over to Gabhart, who'd been moved to one of the shallow depressions in the glass. He and Christy got the colonel to swallow a few tiny sips.
Damn guards can't do a rad-blasted thing. Whoa! Dean, look at that kick! That one's out of here!
The troopers were unprepared to deal with death-sentenced slaves having fun on their own killing ground. They didn't know what to do, so they did nothing.
Ryan, you just opened the floodgates of hope. Life in hell is never going to be the same.
Yes, it will, Christy. Exactly the same.
Dreda entered the doctor's quarters without knocking.
You have something for me, Jan?
Yes. I took some scrapings from Miro's neck, and I found a similar patch of discoloration on myself, which I also sampled. Before giving you my analysis, I'd like to examine you as well, if I could.
Of course.
Dreda immediately unbuckled her battlesuit's torso plates. They came away in two halves, front and back, and were overlapping and airtight. Underneath the armor, she wore a sleeveless gray t-shirt. She pulled the t-shirt off over her head, the hard muscles of her back outlined and jumping under her pale skin. Jan used a magnifying loop to look at the area of redness on Dreda's right shoulder, which had spread from a small patch on her shoulder cap to cover half of her shoulder blade. The entire area was tender to the touch, and the edges of the patch, where they contacted normal-looking skin, had a slight yellowish crust on them.
I'll want a scraping from you, too.
Fine, do it.
With the point of a fine-edged scalpel, the doctor teased some of the irritated tissue onto a slip of plastic. She took the sample over to the microscope on her desk and examined it more closely. Moments later, she drew back from the binocular eyepiece.
It looks like we're all infected with the same creature.
Infected?
Come over here and see for yourself.
Dreda bent over the microscope. What she saw were clusters of single-cell organisms, like stars on a midnight black field. They all looked pretty much the same to her. They were oblong and globular in shape. They had waving, whip-like strands at either end that seemed to propel them around. All the creatures were jumping about erratically. If she looked hard, Dreda could see right through their outer skin or cell wall. Tiny gobs of indefinite stuff moved around inside of them.
What is it?
An organism of some sort. A bacteria or fungus, who knows? We don't have an exact counterpart in our world. From the samples I've taken and cultured, though, it appears to be a relatively slow breeder for a prokaryote. The population doubling times in hours, not minutes.
That's what's causing the rash?
Yes, I'm almost sure of it.
Almost?
It's the simplest solution I can come up with. But at this stage, I can't rule out the possibility that it's caused by something internal. And the organism here is simply a...